In brightest day,
in blackest night.
There is what I do. What I do best isn't very nice.
The Comic Culture Radio Show. Chris Owen, Walter DeRiley.
Excelsior!
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. To hear the lamentation of the women.
And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show. The champions of the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU-FM, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter DeRiley, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your level 20 wizards.
Casting spells in the world of comic books.
Yes. Chris, yes. What's a level 20 wizard?
Well, you know, there's many theories of thought on the matter there, Walt. You know,
really?
It's really a many-faceted, you know, different types
multifaceted.
Of...
Multifaceted.
Yes, yes. Right. I don't really know.
You haven't got a clue, right? Neither do I. Well, that's what we are. We are your wizards. We are your talisman
comics. Yeah, it's all about role-playing games and, like, Dungeons & Dragons. And, you know, you have
I've
to level, you level up. You've played Dungeons & Dragons?
No, role-playing games.
Oh, here. Okay. I don't really want to know about
right,
that.
Okay.
How is your wife doing anyways?
The lovely lady is doing great.
All
Chris,
right,
thank
that's
you.
Good.
Hey, Chris. All kidding aside, we meet here once a week to talk comics.
To talk all about comic books.
To talk about how people should head into their local comic book shop and check out the new comic books that are coming in today.
You know, that is a great segue. You know, you're the master of the segue.
Yes.
And of course,
wizard
of the airwaves.
All right.
New this week is brought to you by slow moving and easily escapable death traps. The choice of your superhero disposal since 1960.
Wow.
Do you remember that, like, in the old Batman TV series, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It would take forever and ever and ever, and then, you know, the Joker would be saying something, and eventually Batman would escape.
Yeah. And they'd always leave. Like, the villains would always, you know, okay, your demise.
That's right. I'll leave you here.
You know, and then the guy doesn't even want to see the death.
That's right.
Yeah, you know?
That's right.
So then they leave, and then, you know, Batman and Robin says, Robin, you know, reach around my back, and in my pocket, there's a knife.
There's right? A bat utility knife.
A bat utility knife, right. Anyway, so, hey, new this week, Chris?
New this week, yes. We've got some interesting choices for you this week. Let's start with Astonishing X-Men number 47.
Let me have a look.
By Greg Pak and Mike McCone.
Astonishing X-Men number 47. Now, that's the series that started, I'm going to guess, a few years back.
Right.
47 issues ago. And
yes,
I think that's
at least.
The one with Joss Whedon that
that's
started.
That's the one that, initially started with Joss Whedon and John Cassidy. I was going to say Sean Cassidy. John Cassidy was doing the art. And really a great, great series by Joss Whedon. You know what? I got to say, I'm not really a fan of the Buffy stuff, but when his early Astonishing X-Men issues were actually very well done. Mm-hmm. He really had a good feel for what the characters were all about.
Yeah.
He brought back a feeling that I hadn't felt since the Byrne Claremont kind of era in X-Men.
Right, right. Yeah, it was hugely popular when it came. I'm wondering, you know, North America wide. I mean, obviously it's not a top 10 book anymore, but
no.
The X-Men being the X-Men. Here's a question. And
yeah.
I know you don't know it, but
yeah.
X-Men fans.
Yes.
You know, like, there's so many of them, right?
There is.
X-Men fans, I'm wondering, like, do they have, are there camps? You know, I only read Astonishing, or I only read Uncanny, or I only read New, or I only read...
I think if you're a diehard X-Men fan, I think you pretty well read everything.
Right.
If you're just, you know... I mean, I know when I was reading X-Men, there was a couple, like, usually I only read one or two. I didn't read all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Until there's a time period in the late 90s, mid 80s, where it was very easy to read all of them because there was all of four, right?
Right, there was
like X-Factor, yep. X-Men, like that kind of thing. So it was easy to read all of them. But now, I don't know, it would be difficult to read all of them because there's got to be 20 or 30 of them out there, right? With all the Wolverines and Deadpools. And
you know what? With the start and stops now, I honestly think probably it revolves around the creative team, right?
Right. Exactly.
Who's got the buzz?
Yep.
Who's doing the really cool story? You know, like what Grant Morrison started with the new X-Men. And all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So, all right. So Marvel has Astonishing X-Men number 47 at your local comic shop today. Please check that out.
Absolutely. And now we've got Justice League number 6 by DC Comics.
Justice League made it to number 6.
I know. Hard to believe. And this is of course, by Jeff Johns, Jim Lee, and Scott Williams.
Yeah.
You know, I had
the,
to
choose. The power trio.
The power trio, for sure. I had to choose this one because this harkened back to
Hark!
To one of those Crisis covers. I don't even remember which was now. But where, you know, Batman was killed and because of Darkseid, and well, now in the cover of this Justice League, Darkseid and Batman are kind of facing off once again. So I thought it was an interesting, kind of flashback-ish kind of thing here.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it actually has anything to do with that in the storyline, but I thought it was interesting as far as covers go.
Fair enough. Ooh, check out the center spread here.
Yeah, some great artwork by Jim Lee as always.
Yeah. I'm holding in my hand the Justice League number 6, which is, you know, the industry's top comic book, 6 months running.
Yep.
It is now the industry standard. Justice League is the top selling comic every month.
And you know what's funny? I mean, how long really has it been since Justice League was the number one comic?
Right.
Really?
Yeah. Was it ever?
Man, you know.
Yeah, was it ever?
I think maybe when it was sort of restarted again as Justice League when Howard Porter was drawing it and Grant Morrison was doing some writing for it. I think back, like, that was like, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it was. I think there was a time period then when it was number one, but before that and after that, I don't think it's ever been a number one.
Right.
I mean, it certainly wasn't number one when you had characters like, you know, Gypsy and, I don't know, Aquaman was the head of the team.
Well, it's 6 months running, and it is number one. I know it's kind of the one that, Jeff Johns, Jim Lee, right?
Yeah.
It's holding its own, so the quality level is there. People aren't dropping this book at our shop.
No.
People aren't dropping this book off of our list. They're enjoying it. They're, you know, I mean, obviously there's the natural drop-off from number ones.
Right.
But it's nothing above normal. I don't know, like OMAC had 60 number ones sold.
Right.
Three number fives sold, right? Yeah. So there really isn't that drop-off. So the people, like, usually you expect in the DC universe anyway, the Batman titles to be the strongest.
Yes.
And you know, lately it was Green Lantern as well, the Jeff Johns Green Lantern.
Yep.
But nice to see the Justice League team at number
doing
one.
Doing well, for sure, absolutely.
All right, so DC's Justice League number 6 at your local comic shop. Check that out today, please.
Yes, and finally, for our alternative pick, we've got from IDW, we've got Magic the Gathering number 2. Now, this is great. Like, unfortunately, I don't think we ever talked about number 1, but this is great that number 2 has come out. And, IDW is great at giving little bonuses and really, really treating their customer clientele well. Case in point, this particular issue is polybagged because it has a Magic the Gathering collectible card in it. Now, for those of our audience listeners who aren't aware of Magic the Gathering, it is a collectible card game that's playable and everything, and you need these
huge game.
Yeah, huge
game. From Wizards of the Coast.
From Wizards of the Coast, And so IDW has now this comic, and they've included a special card. Now, the thing I like about this is that now IDW, for those of you who aren't aware, when they released the Dungeons and Dragons comic book a little while ago, they would put in extras as well. So there would be like a Dungeons and Dragons map kind of thing. Like, so if you actually still play the role-playing game, it would be like a map that you could actually use in the game, or there'd be like character sheets, and there's like things that you could actually use to play the game. So much like they've done with Magic the Gathering, they've included a card to play with the game.
Right. Excellent. And it's a card, I believe, I read this, I could be wrong, but I believe it's a card that you can only get through the comic.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
And Magic is a huge game, and it was a matter of they did Magic the Gathering comics in the 90s.
Yes, they did. Yes,
And they went nowhere, right?
No, you know what? But
maybe the timing was wrong, right? Maybe the timing was wrong.
Probably the timing was wrong, and you know what? I got to say that it wasn't done by IDW. IDW seems to have their finger on the pulse of what people want as far as the licensed products.
Right on. All right, right? So check out that's Magic the Gathering number 2 from IDW at your local comic book shop today. And, of course, that's just a few of the, thousands of
thousands
comics coming out today.
Every week, thousands
local comic shop.
Comics coming out.
Head in and peruse the New This Week section.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's have a quick musical interlude here for a second, and we will continue on momentarily. And here we have a little bit of the old Spider-Man.
Chris, you know, that's got to be probably my favorite of those Kranz things. You know? I just love that.
Well,
and I honestly, I think I can play the drums on that.
I think I could probably do that too.
Yeah,
either
yeah.
one of us very easily yeah. could be the drummer on
great
that.
Tune.
For
great
tune.
Great for pick.
Sure. Thank you. All right. Well, you know what? As part of our new, I guess not really all that new anymore, but one of our new segments now is Comic Culture Mailbag. And Comic Culture Mailbag is brought to you by Alien Languages. Hoping to learn a new language? Don't worry, they all sound like English anyways. So sign up for classes today.
Yes. Well, isn't there, in the world of, I won't say comics, but, Star Trek is a good comic book property.
Yeah.
And it's been so since the late 60s.
Absolutely, yeah.
The Klingon, isn't it? Like, didn't people actually kind of go so far as to make the Klingon language?
I remember years ago when I was working at the Silver Snail, the Klingon dictionary came out, and you could you could compare words and like actually learn how to speak the Klingon language. I don't think there's a Rosetta Stone for Klingon though, for some reason.
Right. Now, you know what? I heard a real bad Klingon joke. You want to hear it?
Sure.
All right. What does the Enterprise and toilet paper have in common?
What?
Well, they both orbit Uranus and look for Klingons.
That was terrible. Yeah. All right, now back to some more Spider-Man music.
Where was I?
All right, comic culture mailbag.
So we have some mail. Is it for me or for you today?
This one is for you, believe it or not. George from Laredo, Texas.
Ah, Chris, Texas.
Texas. Ever been to Texas? I always wanted to go.
All my exes live in Texas.
All right, dear Waltz, I would like to get some comic books for my 10-year-old niece. What do you recommend?
Right. Okay, so it's got a 10-year-old niece.
Yep.
Luckily, our store has a lot of kids' books, and thankfully, on the weekend especially, parents come in with their kids and they look for reading material. And
right.
What I really like is that the boy-girl mix is roughly half-half.
Right, right.
Like you and I, traditional old comic guys, remember the day where comic books were just for boys.
Pretty much, yeah. They always said it was for girls as well, but it really wasn't.
Yeah, and the girls went and bought their Archies at the supermarket.
That's right.
They never went into comic stores. Yeah. Right. So there's tons. I mean, there's like for girls a little bit younger maybe, there's like Strawberry Shortcake.
Right, all kinds
of titles coming out. Like, for well,
I mean,
girls.
Would you still recommend even Archie for little girls? I mean,
yeah, Archie. Yeah? Well, Betty Veronica. Okay. I mean, maybe, I don't know, 8 year old might be, because it's kind of a boyfriend, girlfriend.
Right, right. Might be a little bit too old.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with what they're printing. It's just the kind of, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend humor
right,
that
right.
maybe
okay.
11, 12-year-old girl would love, yep. but maybe an 8-year-old girl would not kind of get yet.
Okay,
right?
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, so all the Archie stuff for young girls is great. You know, stuff like Strawberry Shortcake, stuff like, you know, the graphic novels like Castle Waiting and,
okay,
and,
hold on,
and
what,
things like that.
What is Castle Waiting?
No, Castle Waiting is like a fairy tale. It's by Linda Medley, and we do great with this book at the shop. I mean, people, we recommend it, something
okay.
like this,
okay.
and they take it home, and guess what? Next week it goes, oh, you know, they're a second volume.
Oh, yeah? Right?
Yeah,
no kidding.
That's
yeah.
how good the stuff is.
Really?
Series like Amulet and Bone and stuff, they're like boys and girls will enjoy that kind
right,
of stuff, right?
Right, okay.
But you know what? Just because she's, what's the guy's name again?
George.
George, just because you know, she doesn't mean that you shouldn't be picking her up Spider-Man Marvel Adventures.
Right.
Or Scooby-Doo.
Right,
or,
right.
Or you know, like Art Balthazar's Tiny Titans.
Right, right. For
like
sure.
That.
For
yeah.
sure.
So there, the good news is I'm just rhyming off stuff off the top of my head, and it's all valid.
Yep.
So
sounds good.
You head into your local comic shop. They know their stuff. You ask, hey, you know what? My 10-year-old niece wants to read. They'll probably say, you know, what are her interests? You know,
right.
what does she like? You know, right. what kind of TV shows does she watch? That kind of stuff. They can usually match up pretty good some half-decent comic books that she'll enjoy.
Right, right. right. And I'm assuming, like, you know, they probably wouldn't necessarily recommend, like, you know, they have, like, Star Wars, Clone Wars comics and stuff like that. Would they, you know, would
yeah,
they?
Yeah, probably not for, but you know what? If she, you know, if he goes, yeah, my daughter, my niece loves Star Wars,
yeah.
right? You know, which you'll
sure,
get, right?
Sure, absolutely.
But generally speaking, oh, you know, why don't you try the Smurfs one or
right,
something like that, right?
Right, 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 okay.
There's usually kind of, you know, biased gender perceptions
sure.
that we have,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And hopefully the young people are breaking those down by being vocal and saying, you know, I want to read SpongeBob.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure, or whatever.
So that's good. So
awesome.
Is it Steve?
George.
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 George, thanks. You won't go wrong. Just head into your local shop, and they'll steer you straight.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well, that now leads us into industry news.
Industry news. Chris, are you going to read the industry news?
Well, I just gave it to you.
Oh, yeah. All right. Industry news is brought to you by Monsters. Looking for a fun new pet? Tired of boring cats and dogs? Then why not buy a monster from Monster Island today? From
Ooh.
Giant bugs to oversized aliens, these misunderstood miscreants need a good home today. Contact Mole Man if interested.
Like, you know, I didn't know that the Mole Man and the monsters from Monsters Island were connected. But that kind of makes sense, you know, because the monsters from Monsters Island, that's all like, you know, Ghidorah and Godzilla and Ghidra. But Mole Man, that's from like the Fantastic Four. I never put the two together. But he does have a giant monster on the first issue of FF number one.
You're absolutely
right. That's
right.
Yeah. So it makes sense that he would be in control of them.
Mole Man.
I like that.
All right. Mole Man's Monsters. So they didn't leave a website, but I'm sure just Google Monster Mole Man and it'll be directed.
I'm
right
sure
to
you'll be
site.
All right. Yeah.
All right. All right, Chris, let's start with industry news.
So first off, we got Trailer Trash.
Yeah.
And so for Trailer Trash, we've got the new Avengers movie poster was announced Monday. And the new trailer actually came out yesterday.
Right, yeah. So this poster hit the web.
Yeah,
and everybody went Google over. Wow, a new Avengers
poster. A new poster of all the characters we've already seen.
Yes.
This is
it's new, Chris.
But it's new, and now they're all together.
Yeah.
And
you know what the sad part about this is?
What's that?
There are websites critiquing the poster now.
That's I don't even know how to put that into words, how sad that is.
Right.
Yeah.
So Comic Book Daily, which this show airs on.
Oh, I mean, I meant to say that that idea is great.
And our producer, Anthony Falcone, wrote a critique. You know, the man needs, we need to find him a girlfriend.
You know, I thought he should be doing more producing for our show.
Right, yeah. Apparently he's too busy critiquing Avengers posters.
Well, okay, so he did say, Why does it look like everyone is photoshopped in, and what is Hawkeye looking at? Well, you know, I got to say that probably they were all photoshopped in, which is probably why it looks like that.
Yeah.
You know,
and hey, does Captain America understand that there's an alien invasion going on, Anthony writes? Because he looks like he's posing for a postage stamp.
Well, okay, you know, we're ribbing on Anthony a little bit here. But
rightfully so.
Rightfully so. Uh-huh. But you know what? Here's what I'm going to say about this.
What?
I'm sure he's not the only one that's been critiquing this poster.
Yes.
I'm sure there's many, many websites out there that have done the same thing. And I don't get it. I don't get the hype over a poster. I don't understand it. I mean, I realize that, yes, I've been in the comic book industry for a long time now, and I realize there's going to be hype. I may have even bought the poster as, you know, when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly wouldn't be buying it now, but I just don't get the hype over it. It's cool. Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, what's
Chris,
is it really critiquing necessary?
Don't believe the hype.
It's a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's obviously creating buzz. Things like this, you know, how far away is the Avengers movie? Now, we have all of March, all of April. So we've got, 9 weeks away or something like that,
yeah,
from the movie. So
yeah.
we're at that prime time. And I think companies like Marvel and obviously Disney, right, because they produce this movie,
yep.
They're looking for ways, I guess cheap ways to market this thing.
Absolutely.
And things like this poster, who knows, maybe they make the poster look stupid to be on purpose.
Right.
And then people talk about it, and then they talk maybe. About the movie.
Or maybe
then,
who knows? Or maybe the guy that did the photoshopping is crying in his cornflakes.
Right. Yeah, maybe he's out of work right now.
He could be,
yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I like talking about it. I like, you know, building the hype towards.
Well, yeah,
the movie.
I enjoy talking about it only because it's kind of ridiculous. But
yes.
Talking about it because on a serious note, I don't think I could do it.
Fair enough. Speaking of ridiculous, though, we have new Star Trek. Speaking of Star Trek,
yes,
we have a new Star Trek trailer trash. There's new Star Trek photos of filming going on for J.J. Abrams' second film, and we got a picture of, I don't know what the heck we got a picture of. We got a guy named Benedict Cumberbatch.
Apparently he's the villain.
Yeah, and he's in a lot of weddings.
No, it's not Cumberbun.
Oh, right, yeah, Cumberbun.
Yeah.
Okay. I meant Cumberbatch. Sorry, yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch is the villain in this movie, and there's some fight scene going on, and you see the still of the fight scene, and then
yeah.
It's still kind of not clear what villain he's going to play, and you know, there's kind of people talking, okay, you know, who are the villains going to be and stuff like that. So,
right,
it's early days, right?
Yep.
This movie is going to be released May 17th, 2013. So we have over a year and
over
a few
year.
Months to
over,
go.
Yeah.
And you and I are talking about a still.
About a still, that's right, yeah. Well, that awesome. And that is, well, that's why it's called trailer trash, right?
Yes.
Because it's
yes,
ridiculous.
Right. Absolutely right. All right.
All right. Well, let's keep on going here. Speaking of movies, good tie-in, though.
Good segue.
The graphic novel of Hugo kind of won five Oscars, right?
Kind of.
Well, the movie Hugo won five Oscars, and of course the movie Hugo was based on Brian Selznick's graphic novel, The Invention of Hugo Cabret.
Yes, and it won for cinematography, art direction, visual effects, sound mixing, and sound editing.
Yeah.
So none of the important
ones. That all went to the actor.
That all went,
the actor?
Yeah, right. The,
yeah.
The silent movie.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Meryl Streep, I think, did win for
she won
the
for,
Iron Lady.
For the Iron Lady, yeah, right. That's right. But yeah. Basically everything else went to the actor.
Right. Yeah, so, hey, good for graphic novels.
Absolutely.
Tintin was absolutely shut out, though.
Yeah.
Tintin was, well, I think, nominated for one. Might have been nominated for a couple, like the sound and
was
technical
Tintin,
stuff
was
like
Tintin,
that.
But Tintin wasn't even there for, I don't think it was even there for best animated feature. I think it was.
I think you're right.
No, I think, right. Rango won that one, I think.
Wow.
Well,
hey, listen, I mean, the good news here, again, if we can look for silver linings and look for good news.
Yes.
Okay, because this is what you and I do. We bring out the good news.
Absolutely, absolutely.
is that people are reporting that this was based on a graphic novel.
Right. And this is awesome. The fact that, you know, it was based on a graphic novel and people are getting to know that it was based on a graphic novel is only going to heighten the comic book and sequential art awareness in the North American market.
Worldwide market.
Worldwide.
Chris, worldwide market.
All right. Well, let's keep on going here. We've got – now, this is interesting. Speaking of North America and worldwide markets – So we've got coming up soon. We've got the the Avengers versus X-Men launch from Marvel.
Right, that's and a 12-issue maxi series.
12-issue maxi series where basically every issue is like a fight scene. No, yeah. I think that's the offshoot. Isn't there like a regular? Isn't there like kind of like two series?
There's something like that.
Something like there's like a regular series that's going to have the story, and then an offshoot that's going to have just a big
like
fight scene.
Fight scenes. Yeah.
Anyways. Basically, the stores were invited to participate by having their store either be on the side of the Avengers or the X-Men.
Yeah, and so now you picked.
You picked. Yeah. So now we've got over 1,100 different comic stores have actually signed up.
That is excellent.
Yeah. Yeah,
1,100 comic stores. Now, Chris, I could be wrong, but I believe there are 2,000 and something. Close to half the comic stores in North America have signed up.
That's awesome. That's great.
And which is good. What they get is – and it's a way, I guess, to build awareness. And, you know, Marvel's smart kind of here. What they're doing is they're giving the stores launch kits, and the launch kits have stuff in them like variant comics and promotional material tied to the team that they picked. So, so if Big B picked Avengers, which I hope we did, you'll get Avengers
stuff.
You'll get swag,
yeah.
And you can pass that swag on maybe to your customers.
Cool, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
And then your customers kind of buy into it, and it's like an event. It's like a it's like something that rallies the community of the comic shop together in a fun thing, right?
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. So I think the launch party is actually going to be happening on April 3rd, just before the comic goes on sale. I think the comic goes on sale the next day, is it?
Yeah, it might be.
Something like that. So I guess their stores are going to have parties, and they're going to have great big mock events. I think it'd be, I don't know of any stores in the area that are doing it, but wouldn't it be cool if a store could get like, people dressed up like Avengers or like the X-Men and come in and have a great big to do with it, right? Like, I think that would be a great idea, Walt, owner of Big B Comics.
Yeah, you know what would be even better in like bigger markets, like say maybe Toronto, where there's a couple of shops and they're almost side by side.
Right, right.
One to pick the Avengers and one to pick the X-Men.
Yeah.
And then they all get dressed up and they all start like heckling each other from across the street.
That would be
and
good.
Then a big brawl happens and a riot and then it makes international news, and I bet you sales skyrocket.
I would hope so.
All right.
I would hope so.
All right, Chris, let's keep moving. Here's something I picked up on the internet here. The Asterix Obelix, the fourth live-action movie, is being filmed, and it's, I believe, releasing later this year. And this was exciting because I actually seen one of the Asterix Obelix movies.
Well,
my wife's a French teacher, and my kids go to French immersion.
Right.
So I'm at home one day, and it's like, wife goes, I got a movie for us. I go, that's cool. We got a movie. And she plugs in the movie, and it's the first or second of the Asterix Obelix.
Right.
But it's in flipping French because she wants the kids, to learn the French. And I don't know French. So I'm kind of trying to enjoy, I'm laughing at Gerard Depardieu playing Obelix and stuff, but yeah, so I watched the first one, but all in French.
So here, I bet, when she came in saying, hey, I've got a movie, for the kids, you're thinking, oh, this would be great. It'd be like, Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars, and it's Asterix and Obelix in French.
In French. Yes. I would have loved the Asterix Obelix if it was dubbed.
Right, right.
But
it's all French.
It's hard when you, understand one out of 15 words, right?
For sure.
Right. Anyway, so Gerard Depardieu reprises his role as Obelix. A new Asterix, Edouard Baer. I've seen stills of pictures with them two together. Now, this Edouard Baer guy, he's tall.
Oh, that's
taller
good.
Than the normal, the last
Which,
Asterix.
Isn't Asterix supposed to be a short
Asterix
guy?
Asterix is a short guy. So people have been commenting on the height of Asterix.
Yeah,
because they're purists. And you know, the European, the French people,
unless they do
purists.
Some sort of weird hobbit thing, where they shrink them,
Yeah, that's not going to happen, I don't think. Not in the still that I saw, anyway. Right. And the coolest part, I think, is Catherine Deneuve.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Classy French actress.
Yep.
She's playing the Queen of England.
That's awesome.
Because this movie is based on the old album Asterix in Britain.
Oh, okay, yes. right. Yes. Now, I have to admit, I've never seen any of the Asterix movies. To be honest with you, I had forgotten that they even existed. I don't think they're very widely represented in North America.
Yes.
At all, right? Like,
yes.
I don't I think I may have remembered there being one. And when I heard that there was the fourth one coming out, I was kind of shocked.
Right.
Like,
you
this
know,
was
the problem with a property like that for North America? Because they were pretty – as America being like, you know, the main engine of pop culture over, say, the last century.
Yeah.
Really? They're pretty – they create so much from their own culture that they're pretty insulated from stuff coming here.
Sure.
Because they almost don't need it because they're not starved for it. There's so much creativity.
No.
There was so much creativity coming out of the United States over the last 100 years that they really didn't need a Doctor Who. They didn't need a Tintin. They didn't need an Asterix and Obelix.
Yeah, that's a good
what
point.
Happens is well-to-do, rich people in the industry that may have been fans.
Right.
They go and it's like Steven Spielberg.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
champion yeah. something like Tintin.
Yes,
and
right.
they go, you know what? We have to make this. We have to Americanize
yeah,
it. We have
yeah.
to. And you know, I think it will take something like that to try to make an Asterix Obelix movie for North America, like a North American Asterix
Obelix movie,
as opposed to a French one that they dub.
I'm sure it's good. I'm just surprised that we haven't seen it in like more of it yet, or don't know more about it. That's all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a quick musical interlude here, Walt.
A quick one, please.
A quick one. And, you know, it's going to be an all Spider-Man the week this week. So let's continue on with the Master Technician.
Swinging tune, Chris, and a great pick. Hey, we're going to continue with industry news. And hey, here's a real cool thing that happened last week on Heritage Auctions. I don't know if you read this. This made international, worldwide.
This is pretty crazy.
The BBC, CNN, all the major news sources covered the story. And it was the story of the Billy Wright comic book collection.
Yeah.
Billy Wright was a guy that died several years ago.
Right.
As a kid in the 30s and 40s, he bought comic books.
Right.
But he didn't buy that many of them. There's only like – and then the thing is last summer, a relative was cleaning the basement, I guess, because I'm not sure the situation. Maybe the missus passed away then or something like that.
Okay.
And they were finally getting around to cleaning the house up.
Yeah.
And Billy Wright never told anybody he collected comics.
Okay, right.
And nobody in the family knew.
Right.
And it wasn't like he had a massive collection. He only had like 340 some odd comics.
Right, which really, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but an average comic collector probably has thousands, right?
Thousands.
So, I mean
really. How much did you amass?
At one point, I had over 14,000.
Right. Yeah. And it's like you buy a few every month, and you go to a con, and you pick up five or six, and then a year and a half later, you got 8,000 comic books.
Absolutely, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But the thing with his was, these were all choice issues. These were all important issues, first appearances of major characters.
Right,
like the first appearance of Superman, the first appearance of Batman. Yeah. These are the kind of things he had.
Captain America number two.
First appearance of Justice League, Captain America number two, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, this guy goes down and he finds these comics, so this relative.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he calls somebody and somebody goes, I think these might be worth money.
Wow.
Yeah, let's check this out. And so they get a guy here and there. Anyway, this stuff goes and gets graded by the CGC grading company.
Yeah, yeah.
And none of them were like by any means the best conditioned ones
that are out
there. Some of them were very nice.
Yes.
And I could be wrong. There may have been a few that were. But the final sale price on this small little collection was $3.5 million.
That's incredible. That's crazy. The fact that, you know, really, so 345 comics sold for $3.5 million. That's amazing.
That's like $100 a comic, isn't it?
At least.
Yeah.
At least, yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That's
per
a
comic.
lot of money. Yeah.
The big winner of that that auction was Detective Comics number 27.
Yeah.
That's the first appearance of Batman.
Right.
His graded a 6.5 out of 10.
Which is not bad.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It fetched $523,000.
Yeah.
A first appearance of Superman, which his graded a 3.0, which is considered a lower grade.
Yes, absolutely.
Still fetched $300,000.
That's crazy.
Right. Yeah. And there was a Batman number one, which was a nicer copy for $275,000. There was, you mentioned the Captain America number two, which I believe, if I remember right, was beautiful. Like it was like a 9.4 out of 10 or something
right,
like that.
Right, right, right.
That fetched the whopping $114,000, which is odd because a Captain America number two or any number two issue, they don't necessarily get the big money because they're not the important issues.
Right, right. Right?
But I think the condition of this one merited,
was really
merited
good,
the price. Right. Yeah. So an amazing event for the collectible hobby.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it tells you that these books are still out there, and I'm betting there's even more out there somewhere, right? So, you know, go into your basements, go talk to grandpa and grandma, and find out if anybody ever collected comics in the last little while. And you never know; you could be sitting on a gold mine and not even know it.
Yeah, and then just listen. Give Walt at Big B Comics a call.
Yeah, or Chris at comicbookdaily.com.
Or Chris at Big B Comics a call. And we'll anyway, it's exciting stuff. It's always nice to see that. And I honestly think that comic books, the back issue comic market, Chris, over the last 15 years or so was very much a Silver Age comic market.
Yes.
And the Silver Age meant that era of comics from the late 50s onward where you know, the Marvels were introduced, like Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and Hulk and X-Men. And they were all the rage. They commanded insane prices. And it's almost like people forgot about Golden Age.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you know, your first appearance of Batman and your Superman and stuff, they always were worth money.
Yeah,
but generally speaking, the Golden Age was kind of
– Nobody really cared about that.
Yeah, it's almost like it was overlooked because so much attention was going to the Silver Age.
Right.
I think we're seeing a trend with – these strong prices on these books. We're seeing a trend where the Silver Age has probably priced itself out a bit and people are discovering, hey, there's some dynamite old comics from the late 30s and early 40s that merit another look.
Now, having said that, Walt, now are you talking about strictly superhero books or because there's a lot of like cool, like, you know, crime comics and horror comics from the 1950s and stuff like that. So are you saying that those are going to be on the climb or?
Yeah, I honestly do. I think they're going to be on the climb. And with the crime stuff, usually comics need a marker. Comics need for them to accrue in value very well. They need a hook. They need something that makes that particular issue special.
Right.
And the ability for it to climb in value grows the more special it is.
Right.
So if a crime comic has, you know, I mean, silly things like a decapitation cover.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Oh yeah, it's a decapitation cover. I gotta have that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But even things from the 40s like the Donald Ducks, you know,
right.
The Carl Barks,
first
Carl Barks on Donald Ducks and stuff like that. I think we're going to see those things revisited.
Yeah.
You got to remember now in this day and age that a lot of the investment money into comic books are coming from people that maybe don't really know much about comic
books.
And a lot of that money also is coming from offshore, like Europe, Asia, and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, to them, you know, Disney-type stuff
makes
would be
sense
a great target,
yeah,
right? Because
sure.
that's something that they associate with pop culture America.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, on that note, Chris, I wanted to talk about I have a book up on auction now.
Oh, Get Out, really?
Yeah. So I got to tell you the story about this.
Okay.
So Comic Link is another auction house. That Billy Wright collection was auctioned off at
Heritage
yeah. right? There's another company that auctions comics called Comic Link. There's a few, but Comic Link is another one. And,
okay.
I've dealt with them before. So this is how silly comic books can be
okay.
for the back issue collector and stuff like that. So I had this. It was an X-Men number 21.
Okay.
Nothing special.
Yeah.
But for a collector of X-Men, you know, he needs a number 21 or
sure.
she needs a number 21.
Complete right. run.
Now, I had it. It was a really nice copy. It was pretty. It was
okay.
nice. You know, a
yep.
nice spine. Had very little defects.
Right,
and stuff.
Right.
So I think I had $400 or $375 or something like that. I had
okay.
a high price on it at the back of the store where we keep them under lock and key.
Right.
Right. I took it to Fan Expo in last August.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people looked at it, and it's been in the store. And I think we went to another show in between.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, a lot of people have seen this book. They looked
right.
at it, and they all passed on it.
Right.
So a customer of the shop was sending books down to CGC.
Okay.
And he goes, Walt, find a few, you know, so I can save on shipping.
Right,
right.
That kind
okay, of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I found five or six, and I sent with his five or six, and then, you know, it helped me and it helped him, that
yep.
kind of stuff. So, unbeknownst, like, just by surprise, mine comes back, my X-Men 21 comes back, a 9.8 out of 10.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wow, that's
9.
Amazing.
9.8 out of 10.
For a book from, like,
mid-60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I quickly looked on, there's a census thing, and there's only three 9.8s.
Nice.
And one is never sold, like
wow.
on market.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's been documented. So I email my contact there, my friend there at Comic Link, and he goes, oh, we have an auction up next week. Send it down. It's going to get a great price.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So I sent it down last week, and it's up for auction now.
Oh, wow.
ComicLink.com.
Yeah.
Scroll on to the auction.
Oh, so this is all just a big ploy to try to get people to know about your book.
I don't expect anybody listening to buy it because
oh, okay.
they may not be into it, but just to kind of see the process
yes,
this goes
yes,
through.
Yes, absolutely.
As of before we went on the air, it was up to $977.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's awesome.
So, I'm you know, like just silly little things like that can happen.
Absolutely.
And even, you know, even for a person like me that's supposed to know a lot about comics,
yeah.
you know, I could be sitting on a comic book that's worth way more than I've got a price tag
and
not even
and
know.
And you don't even know it.
Right.
So who knows what other people could have in their basements.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
All right.
All right. Well, let's keep on moving along here. Hey, this is interesting. So it is the time of awards. You know, we had, what do you call it?
Oscars.
The Oscars. And before that, we had the, you know, Screen Actors Guild
yes,
Award. And
yes.
we had
People's Choice.
People's Choice Award and all that. Well, of course, now we've got the Diamond Comic Distributors Diamond Gem Awards.
Yeah, you know what? Before we move on to that, we should have a Comic Culture Award.
We really should.
Yeah.
That's an excellent idea.
Should have a we should have... You know, once a year, we'll pick a date. I don't know when.
Yeah.
We should have a Comic Culture Award. We should have 10 or 12 categories.
Okay.
You know, we'll have, you know, I don't know how we'll do it, but we will definitely
now
work
do we have, like, best guest?
Well,
and, like,
well there's, like, four to choose from, I think. Yeah. My favorite guest is Greg Hyland. Greg's been on four times. Right.
All right. Okay.
I did like Greg Hyland.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
He might be listening, so I better
Might. He actually think he does listen once in a while.
Right.
All right. Well, anyways, the Diamond Gem Awards did come out for 2011. And
now, Diamond Gem Awards is voted on by the stores, right?
Right.
So
it's not by peers or anything like that. It's
shops.
It's strictly by the shops.
Yeah. So Diamond emails or I think they phone.
Yeah, and it's
they ask you a few questions,
and it usually does reflect the sales,
yes.
right? It's usually like, you know, well, this product did really well for my store, so I'm going to say it's number one kind
yeah,
of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not entirely based on that.
Well, they don't go. I don't think the stores go and they count. You know, I sold 93 issues of this and 91 issues of that. So that's my number one. I think they go by, you know, customer buzz,
feel.
That kind of stuff, right?
So interestingly enough. So, you know, as you and I have talked about before in the past, how Marvel and DC are always, you know, number neck and neck kind of thing. And basically, Marvel always edges DC out, basically just a little bit in sales.
In sales, so, right.
And
right.
It, well, oddly enough, that hasn't been reflected by the retailers. Marvel did not get a single gem award whatsoever for 2011.
That is puzzling.
So, yeah. So, I
mean, out of the 21? 21 awards, Marvel got zero.
Zero.
And they're the industry leader.
In almost everything else.
In comic books,
yeah.
Basically.
So, 2011 Book Publisher of the Year. Now they do have some caveats here. So, if they have for a book publisher that has over 4% of the market,
uh-huh.
You know, is not going to be graded the same way that one that has under 4%.
Right,
of the market.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
They've got, you know, Publisher of the Year for over 4% as DC Entertainment. Backlist Publisher of the Year is DC Entertainment. Comic Book of the Year under $3 is Batman. Comic Book over $3 is Justice League. You know, magazine, DC Superhero Magazine, graphic novel, Batman. Like, it just keeps on going on and on for
right,
all the DC
right,
stuff.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know, and when it's not DC, it's, you know, there's Walking Dead is on here. We've got IDW stuff because, hey, we've got TMNT on here. And
mm-hmm.
So it's all different kinds of stuff. It's pretty amazing.
Well, like, yeah, they got the Comic Book Publisher of the Year for under 4%. The smaller one is
yeah.
Dynamite Entertainment.
Yep,
right?
And then manga publisher of the is Viz Entertainment. Sorry, Viz Media.
Yep. Now toys, they also cover toys, and DC rules the roost there. They're the manufacturer of the year. The toy product of the year was the Arkham City series of toys.
Yep.
Which did great at the shop.
The product of the year was Arkham City series action figures, and then the overall toy line was Batman Arkham City. From DC Direct.
Yeah.
And, this is awesome. So.
You know what, Chris, like, you know, I mean, I don't know what this serves. I guess Diamond puts the press release out for this, right? And people love lists.
Yeah, they
right?
really do.
People love lists.
Yeah.
They love seeing, you know, this, I guess, reflects what the retailers think. And, you know, retailers as a group, you know, we probably move out more of this product than anybody else, you know,
sure.
Individually, right?
Yep.
And it's interesting to see the retailer's perspective on, and as you know, I mean, you worked in the shop before,
yep.
The product in the shop is a reflection, really, of the retailers that are there, the
yep.
managers,
yep.
the people on the floor, the people that kind of run that store.
Yep.
And for these people now to say, you know, oh, my favorite, you know, or I thought Viz was the best manga thing.
Right.
You know, it's sometimes a self-fulfilling prophecy is
yep.
what I want to
yep.
say.
Oh,
so
yep.
so they believe that Viz is strong because maybe Viz is doing well. So they're focusing now on, I'm going to get more Viz stuff. I'm
right,
gonna, oh,
right, right.
There's two new titles. One is from Dragoon or whatever, and the other one's from Viz.
Right,
you know,
right.
I'll take a chance on the Viz.
Yep,
right?
Yep, for sure.
And so this is good.
But I think the interesting thing here is that apparently, you know, it's not just one shop that believes in this. Like, it's all these different shops who are doing the same sort of thing. They're all like-minded, right?
Because mm-hmm.
they're all buying into Viz, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. But, yeah. Anyways, I think it's awesome. I think it was great.
Right,
great list.
So, yeah, it is a super list. All right, Chris, let's move it along. Do we want to take a quick music break before we tackle the big,
sure.
huge
because
yes. we got a weighty topic at
yes,
the end,
we really so do. Let's have a quick musical interlude here. How about this one here?
That's super. You know what? I'm listening to that, and I'm expecting to see like Annette Funicello run in here with a beach ball or
absolutely,
something like that.
Yeah.
You know? Great tune. All right. Let's. Hey, listen. So our intrepid reporter.
Danny Champion from Across the Pond. I say.
Yeah. Danny, the old man, went last weekend to the big London Supercon.
Yeah, this is awesome. So, and he had a chance to go in, and he used as a comic culture reporter.
Yep.
And he was checked out all the different sites and everything, and he gave us a great feedback, and which is actually also available on comicbookdaily.com.
Yeah, he posted the I guess the synopsis of what he thought of the show on comicbookdaily.com. And I mean, where do you start? He was like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, he said it was awesome. He said it was thousands of proud nerdy Londoners, really, and most of whom were dressed in full costume, which I think would be great to see and talk to. If only I could have been a fly on the wall there and going up to people who are dressed as Spider-Man or Batman, and then all of a sudden they get this.
I say, tip tip,
a cheerio, old bean.
Oh, I love that Robin outfit is smashing.
Yeah, I think, so, wouldn't that be just great to hear all that?
Yeah, it would be great. No, it was super. I mean, and you know what? I bet you because it's London, right? I'm sure you had, you know, guys from Amsterdam,
France,
you know, and Netherlands, yeah, Belgium, and Belgium, and all those places, and
Scotland,
and you know, and I'm wondering if this. Never mind. Okay. I won't go there. I was going somewhere like around a kilt.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
But I won't.
Spider-Man wearing a kilt?
Yeah. That would be cool.
No, not really.
No?
But, okay, anyways. Yeah.
Anyway.
So he had a great time. He had a chance to what does he say? He's sitting in front of Eisner Award nominated Chris Ryle, the chief creative officer of IDW, and he's impressed with his work. So he had a chance to actually take his own stuff to all these different creative people.
Yeah, because well, Danny's a creator himself, and he's trying to, you know, break into the, you know, work for one of the big boys, right?
Yep.
And he used this con as well to show some of his work and stuff like that, which is great. He also sat in on a few panels. He said the breaking into comics was a massive use to me personally because, you know, he's a creator.
Yep.
He wants to break into the larger world of comics. He went to the Stan Lee
This is great. He went to the Stan Lee question and answer period, and Stan was very open and honest with his answers and managed to field a bunch of questions. Some of his responses were a little bit surprising. When asked who do you wish you'd collaborated with during your career, his answer was Alan Moore, of all people.
He's a diplomat, though. He's in England.
That
kid, Alan Moore.
I like that Alan Moore kid.
I like the Alan Moore kid. He's a good kid.
And then this is interesting. When he was asked which character do you wish you had created yourself, he responded with Batman.
Oh, I thought he was going to say Spider-Man.
I really wish I had created Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I mean,
and Fantastic Four and X-Men.
Wait a minute. Get me another drink.
Yeah. No, Stan, we joke and we rib.
We kid, yeah.
And we kid, you know? Don't worry.
And then when he was asked to pick, cause of course they have the new A versus X thing, Avengers versus X-Men. When he was asked to pick a side, he said, I didn't even know they were fighting. And then when he was pushed for an answer, he said, it'd be like trying to pick your favorite child.
Oh, look at him go. Good for him.
Is that a diplomatic or what?
He was very diplomatic. Yeah. And Danny said that he was in great spirits.
Yes,
that's great. The show, and he was very kind of energetic, and the fans absolutely loved him.
Yeah.
He's the giant of the industry.
He really is. Absolutely.
He is the grandfather, the giant, the founding, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. Hey, people don't remember. People have to realize that when Stan Lee helped create the Marvel Universe of the early 60s,
yes.
You know, we all think, you know, Stan Lee, wow, that's old. You know, 1961, he created the FF. Stan Lee was drawing and writing Captain America in the early 1940s.
Yeah,
he was there from the beginning.
Yeah, he's,
never mind the second beginning.
Never, yeah, exactly.
Because,
right. I mean, he was doing all kinds of different comics. He was doing love comics, westerns.
Yeah.
He was doing all this crap that really nobody wanted to read, and he was on the verge of leaving, and so that's when he created the Fantastic Four.
Yeah. I want to do it my way or I'm gone.
That's right. Well, clearly his way was the right way.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
Best thing that ever happened.
Speaking of conventions, we've got the Toronto Comic Con coming up March 10th to the 11th at the Metro Toronto Convention Center.
Chris, that is very close. That is like not this weekend coming up.
No, the weekend after.
The weekend after.
That's right. Yeah.
For all the Southern Ontario people listening, that is at the Metro Toronto Convention Center. It's not going to be in that big hall, but it's going to be one of the other ones.
So, I mean, this isn't the big fan expo. It's not a huge multimedia, you know, ginormous, you know, science fiction, anime, horror convention that, you know, the one in the fall is. However, this is going to be a cool comic book convention.
Yeah, it's going to
be good. And it is going to have some multimedia to it. It is going to have some celebrities, like, for example, Tia Carrera from Wayne's World is going to be there. Bruce Boxleitner from Babylon 5 is going to be there.
Mr. Buxbama.
And... Charisma Carpenter of Angel is going to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, as well as, you know, if you're there for comics, George Perez is going to be there.
You think people will go there for comics?
They just might, you know. Oh. They just might.
Comic-Con?
Well, you know, considering I just mentioned off all the things that had nothing to do with comics, I thought I'd segue that in.
Fair enough.
Are you done?
Go ahead.
All right. So anyways, Leonard Kirk, Jeff Lemire, Francis Manapul, Dale Keown, Frank Cho is going to be all in Toronto as well. So
yeah,
you know what,
it's going to be a good show. I'm going to set up there. I'll have a little booth. Come say hi. Big B booth will be there somewhere.
Yep. Is Comic Culture going to be set up there as a booth?
I asked for a free table. I haven't got an email back.
Hello?
Is this thing on?
Hello?
Anyway, well, you know what? You know, Chris, I know the people that run the show, James and Amon. They're great people. And I think what they're doing is they're saving us for the big show.
Right. In August, right. I hear we're going to be headlining.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Anyway, so we're talking about cons. We're talking about the London con. We're talking about the Toronto con that's coming up. We're talking about, you are a veteran of cons.
Yes, absolutely.
And I wanted to quickly talk about, we have very little time left. So the guy, what's his name? The guy that says Gary Friedrich?
Gary Friedrich, yeah. He created Ghost Rider.
He created Ghost Rider, but Marvel won the lawsuit that says, you know, Ghost Rider is theirs because he was like a pen for hire.
Right.
So anyway, Marvel ended up suing him for $17,000 because he was selling Ghost Rider stuff at cons because he created Ghost Rider. Yeah,
right.
Well, here's his Ghost Rider from the creator of Ghost Rider. Yeah. But, you know, because it's like a Marvel trademark, he wasn't really giving any of the proceeds back to Marvel.
Here's my thoughts on this. Okay, the guy is selling prints of a character he really doesn't own. He created it, but he doesn't own it.
I understand that, yeah.
Right? So, you know, I can't go around selling prints of Mickey Mouse.
Okay.
I didn't create it, but it's still, I don't own it.
I understand. But here's the can of worms. You've been to 1,000 conventions.
Right.
You've gotten 8,000 sketches.
Absolutely, yes.
So this is the can of worms. When you go to Francis Manapul at the next con, and can you draw a Power Girl in a in boxers?
Right.
And he'll go, well, sorry, Chris, I can't. You know, that's a DC licensed property.
Right.
And I would have to give half of my sketch proceeds to them or something like that. Like, where would that end? Like, at cons.
Yeah.
Come on.
I agree. I think there's going to be a difference between selling a mass marketed print like the way he was selling it and selling one of a kind pieces of artwork the way sketches and, you know, all
yeah,
that
but
kind
like
of stuff they're, is done.
They're, okay, yeah, the way you say it, yeah, you know, mass produced in China versus one offs, you know, that's you know, the black, the white, whatever. But they're this other guy, Gordon Murphy, who did a 200 print run of something called
Sean Gordon Murphy,
Werewolves ABCs or something like that. He gave most of them away, apparently, according to an article on ICV2. He sold 40 of them at a con.
Right.
So Marvel's lawyers came after him. 40
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
You know? So that means 20. And that means 10.
I agree.
An artist can sketch 40 sketches over a week.
There's something very – Marvel and DC have to tread really lightly, I think, here. Because you know what? Conventions have been really the bread and butter of comic books for a long time. They've really helped what keeps the market going. And I don't want them to forget – I don't think they should. I shouldn't say I don't want – they're not going to listen to me. You know, they shouldn't forget where they've come from.
Right.
And they have to keep remembering that, yes, these are your – characters, but you know what? You have to turn a blind eye at some point. I think doing sketches and things like that is okay. I don't know if, you know, because I've seen Adam Hughes selling prints of, you know, Fire and Ice and Power Girl and Wonder Woman and all that kind of stuff at his table as well. And they've said, well, you really shouldn't be doing that. You know, and he kind of keeps on doing it. So, you know, I can kind of understand at that point. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to just selling sketches for fans, because fans are what's kind of running everything, I don't think that Marvel and DC should be touching them at all. I think sketches and original pieces of artwork should be fair game.
Well put, Chris. Well put.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for today.
All right. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone, engineered by Andrew Roebuck. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link. Scroll down to the bottom to the comments field and add your comments. And check us out at getthepointradio.com.
And remember, if your life isn't going the way you imagined, don't worry. Just reboot it for the number one.
Nice. All right. Please head out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a great day.